Support for the New Hampshire News Recap comes from you, our listeners, and from the University of New Hampshire, where the Center of Excellence for Operational Ocean and Great Lakes Mapping, dedicated to advancing ocean exploration and promoting public and private partnerships, is now under construction. Learn more at unh.edu.
This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. The federal government is ditching its plan for an ICE detention facility in Merrimack. Lawmakers are considering a bill that would restrict abortions to 20 weeks, and emails released by the federal government have shed further light on New Hampshire businessman Dean Kamen's ties to Jeffrey Epstein. Joining us now to discuss some of this is the Boston Globe's Amanda Gokey. Good morning, Amanda.
Hi, Rick.
So good to have you back. Governor Kelly Ayotte announcing earlier this week that the federal government is no longer planning to develop an ICE facility in the town of Merrimack. What do we know about the plans and you know, we're seeing proposals for these facilities across the country.
Yeah. So just to wind back for a second, you know, there's really been anger and frustration about this proposal circulating in New Hampshire since the Washington Post first reported on it in late December. But concrete details about what exactly the federal government was planning were really hard to pin down until a little bit earlier in February. That's when Governor Kelly Ayotte's office released documentation from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security containing really key details about what their national plan was for what they were calling a, quote, new detention model. The documents showed that the Trump administration was looking to purchase and renovate more than 20 massive warehouses around the country, looking to house immigrant detainees there. As you know, obviously, this administration is pursuing its mass deportation agenda. All told, you know, that plan was going to cost $38 billion nationally, include more than 92,000 beds. And just to zoom in on New Hampshire for a minute here, they were looking at this massive warehouse in Merrimack that could be used as what they were calling a regional processing center for immigrant detainees that would have up to 600 beds.
And the governor had said that she did not know about the plans until very recently. Federal officials said they'd been in contact with her office, though. What do we know about her involvement with the feds on this?
Yeah, so that's a great point. There really have been these kind of conflicting narratives about who knew what and when exactly they knew it. Ayotte, you know, has really said publicly for a long time now that she's been reaching out to the White House, to DHS. She's been urging them to get in contact with local officials so that they can have a say in this process, but that she hadn't been able to pin down, again, these just like key details of this plan. But, you know, then in February, we heard the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Todd Lyons, testifying in a congressional hearing that the agency had provided Ayotte with an economic impact summary of the project. She sort of immediately denied that. And shortly after that exchange, she comes out publicly and saying the feds have just provided her with that documentation. And then she released it publicly. And, you know, we now know that last week, Ayotte has said, you know, she went to Washington, D.C. She met with the DHS secretary, Kristi Noem. She sort of brought forward Merrimack's concerns to them. And she said those were productive conversations, sort of culminating in the cancellation of this project.
Yeah, no, Ayotte didn't publicly said that she opposed or would support the plan, but town leadership definitely opposed the plan. What reaction were you hearing from state and local officials?
Oh, people in Merrimack are very, very happy with this news. From everything I have been hearing, that they're describing this as like a sigh of relief now that it has been called off. They didn't want the warehouse in the first place. They were worried it would be a financial hit to the town, you know, if this massive building goes into federal ownership, that's a loss of $500,000 to their tax revenues, property tax revenues. Yeah. And they were worried about, you know, the strain on police and emergency services, just given the outcry that we've been seeing from this. You know, Republicans and Democrats from Merrimack really are agreeing that this was a great decision, great news for their town.
Yeah, and in fact, we're getting that from across the board, Republicans and Democrats in Concord in many respects, too. I mean, I'm wondering about the political lens on this. I mean, I think Republicans, of course, are pointing this out. This is kind of a great move for the governor. Is this likely to come up on the campaign trail as we head into the midterms and in the gubernatorial race?
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of point of difference where, yes, as you said, like Republicans are really saying this is a victory for Kelly Ayotte. You know, she handled this great. She advocated for our state. They're trying to chalk it up as a win and sort of move on from this issue. You know, Democrats are really taking a different approach and saying this is thanks to the people of New Hampshire for standing up, for protesting, for, you know, making their opposition to this project really clear, for putting pressure on political leaders to act in their best interest. So, yes, you know, as far as the governor's race, I think that, you know, great sort of political commentary on this about how, Ayotte really had to take action on this one way or another. There was sort of mounting pressure from the grassroots. And I don't think she wanted this to be the dominating issue of her reelection coming up, in November. So I think this certainly does reshape to some extent how candidates will be framing issues. Although, you know, I don't think immigration as a broader issue is going away anytime soon. And so
surely
I'm sure
not.
We can expect candidates to continue discussing
those
issues and concerns, public concern around ICE as well, moving forward.
Yeah. And in fact, earlier this week, the state's congressional delegation introduced legislation that would require local approval before any ICE facilities could actually open. I mean, does that stand any realistic chance?
That's right. Yeah. You know, this proposal really comes after this national detention plan sparked so much public outcry. And obviously that's happening in New Hampshire, but also there is a sort of national aspect to this as well. The plan wasn't just specific to Merrimack. It was, you know, these 20 plus warehouses really all around the country. We've seen other warehouse plans get scrapped as a result or in the wake of this kind of public outcry.
Yep.
So the idea is, you know, if one of these warehouses is going to be situated in a town or city, the local sort of people on the ground should have a say in whether that's a good fit for that specific place. I think too soon for me to say whether this, you know, really stands a chance and whether we'll see any sort of bipartisan agreement on it. Although, you know, other immigration issues we are seeing, to some extent, that there's some agreement across party lines.
While we still have you here, Amanda, I want to talk to you about some other state house news. A group of lawmakers voting against a proposed 20-week abortion ban this week. What other restrictions would this bill put in place, and where does it stand right now?
Yeah, so just to wind back for a second here, listeners might remember, you know, it was 2021 when the state sort of first approved restrictions on most abortions at 24 weeks. So that's where sort of things stand right now. That went into effect in 2022. You know, abortion is allowed in very limited circumstances after 24 weeks, risk of life to the mother, fatal fetal anomaly are a couple of the instances. This bill proposes making abortions after 20 weeks, so a full month earlier, a felony level offense. And then again, there would be some of these very limited sort of exceptions to that rule. As far as where this stands, you know, there was a 13-4 vote against this week from the House Judiciary Committee, sort of key panel, recommending that this bill be rejected. It still will move forward to the full House, where all of the members will have an opportunity to vote on it, but it can really only advance if it, you know, gains the approval of a majority of members there. And this indicates really some skepticism.
And we know that previously the governor has promised that she would not sign a bill that would restrict abortion further.
Absolutely. A very important point to remember in all of this.
Amanda Gokey, reporter for the Boston Globe. Amanda, thanks so much for coming in this morning. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And always appreciate your work. You can find more of Amanda's work, by the way, at bostonglobe.com/New Hampshire. Now, the latest batch of files related to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein detail his extensive ties to rich and powerful figures, and that includes one of New Hampshire's most well-connected businessmen, Dean Kamen. There's been a slow drip of news about Kamen and Epstein in recent months. New reporting from NHPR out this week does shed some light on one of the connections between the men, how a former model and pilot who has been at the center of the Epstein story came to live for a period in New Hampshire and to work for Kamen's company. NHPR's Todd Buchman joins us now to talk through the records. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Rick.
Todd, the pilot's name is Nadia Marchenko. Who is she in relation to Epstein?
So Marchenko is someone who appears to have had a long and complex relationship with Epstein. She was a teenage model. She emigrated from Slovakia to the United States. At some point, she enters Epstein's orbit. A number of Epstein's victims claim that Marchenko was complicit in their abuse, that Marchenko took part in the sexual abuse of women and girls. Marchenko's lawyers have maintained that, she herself was a victim of Epstein's abuse. In 2007, her name was included on a plea deal signed by Epstein, meaning she wouldn't be prosecuted. Federal prosecutors at the time labeled her a possible co-conspirator. Marchenko in the mid-2010s kind of also establishes her own identity separate from Epstein. She earns a pilot's license and became, for lack of a better term, kind of like an aviation influencer. Marchenko became a regular poster on social media, images of her flying, fancy private jets, attending industry events, that sort of thing.
And so, how does she tie into Dean Kamen?
Well, it's been previously reported in numerous outlets, including by Amanda's, that Marchenko, came to New Hampshire, lived here. She worked as a flight instructor around 2014, 2015, giving lessons to employees of Kamen's company, DECA, in Manchester. And on some state paperwork from that time, she listed her home address as this Manchester condominium that's owned by one of Kamen's top business associates. This has all been out in the public record, but there are emails in the Epstein files that shed light kind of on how this relationship came to be.
Okay, and these emails show how Marchenko, the central figure in Epstein's orbit, got introduced to Kamen?
Nothing conclusive showing when or where they may have first met, but if we dial back to 2013, this is when Kamen visits Epstein's private island in the Caribbean. Years after Epstein's conviction and jail sentence for soliciting sex from a minor. And the day after Kamen leaves the island, there's an email from Jeffrey Epstein to Nadia Marchenko in which he says, "I've got a job for you. Do you want to go be a flight instructor for my friend Dean Kamen?" And then there are these other emails showing Kamen thanked Epstein for having him to his island and mentions how he'll follow up with Marchenko. Marchenko has kind of been largely off the grid in recent years. A lot of, tabloidy newspaper articles about how she seemingly vanished from public view since Epstein's suicide. We reached out to her attorney for comment, and Marchenko did actually issue NHPR a statement this week, essentially breaking her silence to defend Kamen. She said he had nothing but quote help, he did nothing but quote help me in my attempts to be free of suffering. She also said that just because someone's name appears in the Epstein files, that does not mean they're guilty.
And what's Kamen said about this?
Well, Kamen has said repeatedly that he only had limited interactions with Epstein and that they were essentially networking. He had no knowledge of Epstein's abuse of women and girls. Through a spokesperson, Kamen told NHPR that Marchenko and he had a professional relationship and that while she was in New Hampshire, she lived for a time at one of Kamen's properties. A property, the spokesperson said that Kamen has opened up to many other people. But again, this was only a professional relationship, no knowledge of Epstein's crimes. And to be clear, Dean Kamen has not been accused of any criminal wrongdoing.
But there has been some fallout for Kamen, right? We've got 30 seconds here, Todd. Since the release of those records, what has been that fallout?
Yeah, the nonprofit robotics competition he founded called FIRST, is conducting a review of Kamen's ties to Epstein. Which do go beyond just Marchenko. The men were in touch on occasion for more than a decade. Those files show that there were communications between Kamen and Epstein about connecting wealthy and powerful people to this nonprofit. And then Kamen is also on leave from Army. That's the government-funded project in the Manchester Mill Yard, and also removed from the board of directors of Beta. That's the Burlington startup company.
That's NHPR's Todd Buchman. Todd, thanks so much for your reporting.
Thank you, Rick.
You can find more of his work at nhpr.org, and we're here next Friday with more. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.